Hello and welcome to Talking Property with CBRE. I'm Catherine House, your podcast host, and in today's episode, we're doing something a little different. Rather than speaking with established industry leaders, we're focusing on two emerging voices who challenge delegates at this year's Cornet Australia Conference to think differently about the future of work. Cornet is a non-profit corporate real estate association representing nearly 10,000 members in 50 countries. At their annual Australia Conference, their Red Talks program gives young leaders the opportunity to present bold ideas to hundreds of industry professionals through fast-paced TED-style presentations, helping bring new perspectives into the corporate real estate conversation.
I think ultimately, doesn't matter how many tools and technology we have, people will do business with people.
That's Marco Gritti, who explored what the next generation really expects from work.
I think we're not getting the best out of our people if we're just measuring by production quantities.
And that's Carmen Paik, who tackled one of the biggest questions facing organisations in the age of AI. What is a human worth? I hope you enjoy our conversation. Marco, welcome to Talking Property. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Catherine. Great to be here.
And Carmen, I loved your Red Talk. Thanks for joining Talking Property.
Thanks for having me. It's great to chat with you today.
So for listeners who weren't at the conference, I'd love to hear a little about the Red Talks experience from you both. You only had 7 minutes to present a big idea. So maybe start with you, Marco. What made you put your hand up?
Well, I think it was one of those moments where the topic aligned very well with my experience. And then internally, it sort of fit quite well where I was. We're building new teams now. So this is very front of mind on, you know, how do we attract and retain younger generations? So it was just the alignment of a lot of things, and that worked really well.
And what about you, Carmen? What made you want to do the talk?
One of my colleagues actually sent it to me and suggested that I apply. So she'd done it before in a previous year, and she said it was a really great experience and she thought I'd be really great for it. Had a read through, sounded great, sounded like a really good opportunity. So I put my submission in.
It must have been nerve-wracking.
Yes, a little bit. I wasn't expecting to be chosen, to be honest. So I was pleasantly surprised, put a lot of effort into sort of what my topic was going to be. And yeah, obviously it resonated with the team.
So how hard was it distilling a big idea into just 7 minutes?
For me, I always find the shorter the harder, because you just have to remove all the fat and get to the juice, which is a good exercise. And I feel like it's an exercise that I feel like nowadays, especially with AI, you have to get better at. AI does a lot of that AI slob and adds things that don't have to be there. So I feel like having a short amount of time where you can just get your point across and do that really well, I think it's sort of, yeah, trained that muscle that perhaps was dormant for a bit. So I really, really enjoyed it.
And Carmen, yes. Did you use AI to help with your presentation?
I actually didn't. And I didn't fit mine into the 7 minutes. So I was a little bit over. But yeah, I did it all myself. So it's quite deliberate with sort of breaking it down, but definitely a task to get it to fit within that time frame and say all the things that I wanted to say.
Well, it was very powerful. I really enjoyed it. So Marco, maybe we could start with you and your presentation, which was about the next generation and work. You were challenging some of the assumptions about what younger generations want from work. What do you think is the biggest misconception that leaders still have?
I think the biggest misconception is that the younger generations value above everything flexibility, which is important, but it's not the thing that retains them. They think that perhaps the purpose and the vision of the company is what attracts the younger generation, which is important, but I think, again, it's not the one that, you know, makes people stay in the longer term. I think the thing that leaders need to get better at is understanding that the one thing that attracts and retain the younger generation, probably any generations from here on, is growth in their company. So personally, a lot of people have got goals, but very few managers sit down and understand what those goals are. And as younger generations, everything is instant. We want to move quickly. We want to know that we are growing. It doesn't mean that we need to have a promotion every 12 months. What it means, though, is that we can see that we've got a mapped growth. We know where we're going next, and our employer is supporting there. I think the moment employers understand that the key to retaining younger talent is to say, first of all, we know, where do you want to go and how can we help you get there? And then mapping that out, I think it's really a really important part of the journey of retention.
And how important do you think it is for people to really understand what skills they need next?
I mean, I think it's everything, right? The main thing as leaders, what we have to do is, hopefully you've walked the path that some of your employees are walking. And so you can leapfrog some steps. You can perhaps send them, you know, an uncharted way because you've done things that might not have worked for you. So I think knowing the next skills is a critical component of growth. But, you know, the world is changing so quickly. And so also being flexible and sort of being, instead of perhaps a specialist, you know, develop that generalist skill and sort of, instead of having depth, have breadth of skills. I think that's quite important for the new generation.
And so if we're thinking about success, what for the younger generation does success look like?
Oof, this is a hard question. For us, success is having the flexibility is really important. Feeling challenged, not just, you know, feeling busy, but also feeling a sense of autonomy and ownership. I think when you look at the data, a lot of younger generations have got side hustles, are involved into startups. And when I start to think about why that is probably because we want to feel that ownership mentality instead of an employee mentality. And we want to be part of something bigger than ourselves. As cliche as it sounds, I think it's very true for our generation. So I think success is really sort of feeling like there is ownership in the work that you do, you're recognized in that, but you are given the breath to explore, to fail, experiment, all of that within sort of an environment where failing is encouraged and not punished.
And so you mentioned startups, and one thing that would be good to explore is, you know, startup lessons for large organizations, I guess, because you've helped build startups yourself. What do they get right, do you think, that large organizations often really struggle with?
I mean, startups is such an interesting universe, right? Because the beautiful thing about startups is that there is no queue. If you know how to do the job, you probably are already doing the job, whether you're technically adept for it or not. And that's because the company needs that skill set right now. Whereas with larger organizations, there is a hierarchy that inherently happens when you have large teams. And I think that the main thing is sort of, how do you translate the spirit of startups? Giving the younger generations the ability to get there by themselves, by learning and doing that work, as opposed to sitting on the sidelines and letting perhaps their leaders take the success or have the learning, because it's all about, you know, cutting your teeth. It's all about learning, doing the thing, as opposed to sort of planning to do the thing and then someone else gets to do it.
So in listening to your talk, some of the themes that really featured heavily were this whole idea of autonomy, competence and belonging. How do you think that large organizations can create that real sense of ownership and connection?
I think it ultimately comes down to the teams within the organization. I think the organization needs to understand that there are a lot of islands as part of the archipelago that is the company. And what you need to do is you need to create channels within those islands to communicate, to share those skills. And ultimately, when you do that, it empowers the employees to sort of leave their silo and, you know, go out and explore other parts of the organization. And I think one thing that a larger organization can offer that startups don't is that breadth. Is, you know, because you have such a diverse skill sets, you can learn from so many different professionals and different professions that you can get exposed to that quite quickly. But I feel like a lot of the larger organizations sort of see themselves as those not connected islands, as opposed to sort of that larger ecosystem, where I think it could be very beneficial for people to be able to move and build that autonomy and that competency within the larger organization. Because when you do that, then staying at the current organization doesn't stay that safe option and, you know, we're staying here because we can provide money, but it starts to become the obvious option because you have mapped growth, you've got competency, you're getting upskilled by your leaders and other teams. And so then it becomes a pleasure to be part of that large organization.
I love that idea of connected islands. I'm going to use that moving forward. So if we take a broader CRE angle, when we talk about attracting and retaining talent, what role does the workplace itself play, do you think?
I think it plays an important role. You know, I don't think it plays the most critical role. I think the culture, the connection with employees is the critical part. That being said, the workplace, I think what it does is it can be a glue to bring things together and hold teams together. It's perhaps, as I said, yeah, not the main component of it, but I think it's a critical component of bringing that team together, of making sure the ideas flow with one another. But again, I think a workplace should really just reflect the team that it's serving, whether it's hybrid, remote. You know, a workplace in 2026, it looks so different than what it did 10 years ago. And probably 10 years ago, in 10 years in the future, is going to be even more different, right? And so for me, for us, as we expand, you know, our teams, is what are the constant things that we can nurture now within our younger generations that regardless where they are, they feel a sense of belonging and autonomy and all the things that we've discussed today.
So just before I go on to Carmen, bigger question maybe, but if you were advising a CEO today on one thing they should change to better engage young talent, what would it be?
I probably would say sit down with the younger generation and just ask the question, ask them where they want to go, who they want to be, and how the organization can help them get there. I think as humans, we want to be heard and we want to feel appreciated. So I think if a leader does that, 80% of the work is done. And then it's about co-creating that path with the employee and the CEO and the leader themselves. That will create ownership on both ends. And that likely will lead to a successful relationship between the employee and the employer.
So Carmen, your talk asked a deceptively simple question, which is, what is a human worth? What made you want to tackle that topic?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a multi-part answer, to be honest. There's been so many discussions around the value and future potential of AI, and I think those are incredibly important conversations. But as a person who designs spaces for people, I'm really interested in the human aspect and our personal experiences in the workplace. I also see so much wasted potential in people because they're just too busy to do their job well. Imagine if we could free up that time, and, you know, away from the mundane tasks that AI is hopefully going to take over, so that they had that space to think and push and grow themselves in new ways. And the work is so much richer for our human experience. And I think that that's really the key. We spend so much of our time at work and with our colleagues. So it's also the experience that should really matter. Are we learning? Do we have purpose? And is our work actually adding value to our lives as well? Are we providing that value back? So a bit of a multi-part piece.
Absolutely. AI is something I've really struggled with because my background is writing and I really resisted using AI because I'm like, that's what I do. And why am I getting AI to do it for me? But I've been gradually learning to, I guess, hand over the mundane parts of my job to get AI to help so I can use more of my strategic brain. But I guess a question on that AI paradox, as AI becomes more capable, why do you believe that human qualities are going to become more important or not less?
People are always going to be needed to be accountable and make those decisions for AI, but we're also the ones that are asking the questions of it. We currently define and shape what the output from it will be. And it's our creativity that drives it. AI is a tool. It's not creative. It can't make judgments and it can't do that critical thinking for us. So it's a tool for us to utilize and to help us do things more easily. So we should be able to use it to free up that time, to give us the time back to do the things that we want to be actually doing. As you said, writing, doing all the things that you're actually good at and passionate about, and freeing up some of that space. I also think the world is hopefully moving in a more positive general direction. And this includes being more inclusive, more open, and creating change. But AI can't do that itself. We have to do it and we have to decide what it looks like. And I think AI has been trained off all of our past bias and belief as well. So it holds those biases too. So it needs us to do that critical thinking part, do the change work ourselves. And I think that's really, really key and really important. I think that connection point's really important too. So our connections with our colleagues, our connections with our clients, all of those parts that make it really rich to be at work are so important, I think, in that process as well.
So you talked about creativity and obviously, you know, you are creative both at work and outside of work. You're a dancer and you drew on those experiences as well to form your talk. Can you explain the analogy between memorable performances and memorable workplaces?
Yeah, I think for me, they're both about the connection that you get between people and how you feel in a space. So as a workplace designer, obviously the people experience and the people that are in the space are the key, but I think that the atmosphere of the space is really important in itself and how we interact with others within it. So as a dancer, I see that as a two-way experience as well between me and the audience. I'm giving something to them, I'm crafting the atmosphere for them. And at the end of the day, it's usually our connection with someone that we remember, not their ability to fill out a spreadsheet really well, because the skills don't matter if they can't connect to us personally. So it's being open to connections with each other and placing importance on that part of it. And in dance, I do that really deliberately through my movements, through my timing, through my face. And when I'm designing a workplace, I'm also quite deliberate about what I'm doing in that space as well and where people can come and connect and how they might work together and how I'm crafting that.
As part of your talk, you also challenge the idea that productivity alone should define success. How do you think organizations should think about value differently?
I think we're not getting the best out of our people if we're just measuring by production quantities. You can do a heap of work and it can be terrible work, or you can spend time on doing something and have a really good outcome. Ideally, you find a balance there where it's a nice mix of productivity and innovation, because you do eventually need to produce something and you can't always be innovating and it doesn't need to always be something new. Sometimes the known thing is the better way to go. So it's finding that balance of the parts where you do need to push yourself and the parts where, you know, actually we just need to get this thing out and that's okay. People are also more productive when they're supported and feel a sense of well-being and connection. And I think that that was talked about quite a lot at the conference as well. So it's more that the initial focus shouldn't be on the productivity. It should be on supporting people to be their best. And I think if we ask our clients about why they enjoy working with us, it's, you know, it is the work that we create and being competent at our jobs, but it's also that relationship piece that becomes the really key part of it. It's those soft skills that go into creating connections with others, you know, building trust, finding solutions to problems that the clients didn't know that they had yet. Because you can have the best technical skills and be fast at your job. But as I said before, if people don't like working with you or you can't build those relationships, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the relationship piece is just so important. You also spoke about creating room to fail, and that's, I think, a really interesting piece, but also to learn and create. What do you think that looks like in practice?
I think it's a hard one. I think Marco touched on this as well, but I think it comes down to leadership and the culture of an organization, and it needs to be safe and allow for that failure. I was teaching a dance class the other week and we talked a lot in the class about being ugly when we're doing our freestyling in dance. And it's so scary. There are mirrors everywhere. You're worried everyone is looking at you. They're worried that I'm judging them as I'm teaching them. But I was like, you know what? It's not meant to be nice. It's not meant to be clean at this point. You're creating and you're finding new things. So, you know, I'm messy and I'm ugly all the time when I'm freestyling, but we have to practice and make mess before you can produce those perfect clean shapes. So we had this giant big chat about it and they've actually been so much freer in their movement since. And that has translated into them being much more technically better when we're working on our choreography and things like that. And I think it's the same at work. In the design world, our work is very iterative. So we do actually practice failure quite a lot, but there is an ongoing pressure to be constantly producing and to be valuable through that. But if our organizations could make it safer and make it an integral part of our work days to be able to fail and create and try something new, I think we'd be so much better off as a whole. And I do think this often works better in a less hierarchical structure as well. It's the idea that everyone's ideas are just as valuable regardless of their level, and everyone has something different to give to a conversation.
I love that idea of embracing the messiness, and also that point about hierarchical structures. I think that's one of the things I like most about my role is it's a very flat hierarchical structure, and I think that does bring out the best in people.
Yeah, and I think it just allows people to throw ideas out there. And, you know, I think it's important even for leaders to say the dumb thing sometimes, and the people that are down below are like, oh, you know, it's actually okay if I say something silly. You know, we're all contributing.
Yes. And so taking that CRE angle, and you're a workplace designer, how do you think workplaces should evolve if the most valuable human skills are creativity, empathy, and connection?
Yeah, I think our workplaces need to have spaces that are ultimately created with human needs in mind. And at the base of it, this looks like having truly inclusive design, designing for disability and for neurodiversity, so people don't have to struggle just to be present at work. Within this, there's a need for different types of spaces. So for intimate spaces that can feel safer and comforting for different types of work, but also for those larger spaces for group collaboration. It's also designing in those smaller moments of connection too. So those incidental encounters where two people, maybe they both need a coffee and they end up in the break room at the same time, or they stepped on the stairs for a quick chat because they had to cross over at a certain time in their day. So I guess ultimately just good human-centered design with purposeful atmosphere and thinking about the type of work that needs to be done. So everyone's organization is going to be slightly different to what that looks like. But at the base of it as well, that technology is in the background. So whether that's AI or it's just your really good working Teams calls sitting in the background seamlessly. So it's just supporting you and helping to facilitate you to do better work.
Yeah, I love the idea of stairs. It's one of the things about my workplace I enjoy the most after we redid it is that, you know, yeah. There's three sets of stairs and I just have some of my best conversations on the stairs.
Yeah, it's those side chats that are so important.
Yes. So one final question before I bring Marco back in, but your talk was about AI. What do you think is one uniquely human capability that AI is unlikely to replace?
I think this is really hard to narrow down to just one.
Yes.
But I'm going to put two in there maybe. But I think it's just got to be our imagination and our ability to connect with other people. That's the part that makes it worthwhile, that connection piece.
Yes. So Marco, bringing you back in, I think what was interesting that your and Carmen's talks came from really different starting points, but they seem to arrive at a similar conclusion. So whether we're talking about AI or attracting future talent, that organisations need to think more deeply about the human experience of work. So question for you, Marco, do you think today's workplaces are still optimised for efficiency when they should be optimised for growth and innovation?
I think some workplaces do it and others don't do it as well. I think the workplaces that will win are the ones totally, like Carmen said, that understand that the best work comes from the connection. And I think we are realizing, especially the younger generation, this need and want of in real life situations. They want to be perhaps in the office a little bit more. They want to be exposed to those conversations, those coffee chats, those side chats on the stairs. Because so much of the growth of a younger person just happens through those conversations. So I think the workplaces that will win in the future are those that understand that, you know, create a connection and then, yeah, performance will come, but that will just be an outcome of what you've created earlier on, which is that connection piece.
And maybe taking a really forward look, Carmen, if you imagine the workplace of 2035, what do you think people will value most?
Again, I think that one's a difficult one to narrow down to just one thing.
Yes, you can have two or three.
I think, though, we're still just going to want to be able to learn and grow and feel valuable. So, you know, I think that was the heart of Marco's talk as well. And with technology continuing to help us take some of our workload, I think being able to retain a sense of purpose and pride in our work is really important, and to keep that sense of learning and growing in our positions.
And Marco, how does corporate real estate need to evolve, do you think, to support those expectations?
Well, I think this sector and any sector, I think what they need to understand is that ultimately, you know, how do you create spaces where there is a real sense of connection that happens with employees and other parts of their organization, and doing so, I think, will lead to workplaces that are able to retain that talent in the longer term.
And so we're thinking about that. What do you think, there's one thing that leaders are doing that they should stop doing to help support this?
I think perhaps something that leaders should do less is probably, you know, think of their team as silos, as not part of a larger organization. We see it mostly when we've got sort of the Christmas parties, you know, the realization that we as an organization have got so many more people that you often don't see them. They sort of come out of their teams and their spaces. And so I think it's just about, instead of stopping, you know, really start doing more of that connection with cross-functional teams, bring those different skill sets and those different generations together. They can learn from each other.
Carmen, we've talked about stopping. On a more positive note, what do you think they should be starting to do more of?
Yeah, just trying to get the best out of the team. They, in effect, in their top leadership role, they're the facilitator of the workplace. So I'd love to see a bit more support for curiosity and learning and encouragement from all different parts of the organization through their role. Because I think as well as AI comes in and maybe takes some of their more data-driven parts of their job, hopefully they'll have a bit more time for that human element and really getting the best out of the team.
Have you got a start suggestion, Marco?
I mean, I think, yeah, what they should start doing is start listening. I think, you know, we have 2 ears and one mouth, use the same ratio, listen more, talk less, go around the organization and really understand what people care, what they want more. And yeah, like Carmen said, it's less about leading from a place of certainty and more of that place of curiosity.
So a final reflection, Marco, what's a belief about work that you held 5 years ago that you've since changed your mind about?
Oof. My belief 5 years ago was that larger teams were fundamentally better at creating culture, at creating better work, ultimately creating more value for the company. And that is absolutely wrong right now. I have changed that opinion strongly. I think smaller teams that understand and are deeply connected with one another, understand the purpose of why they exist in the larger organization, and each of those people see how they can contribute, will far outrun any team that's sort of large, because I think they're ultimately driven by a better cause than those larger teams. So yeah, I think the main change has been team size.
Carmen, is there anything that you've changed your mind about?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the last point. When I was younger, I assumed that leadership had all the answers and that they knew what they were doing. But the reality is that nobody knows. You know, you can have experience and you can have knowledge, but we're all learning and changing and growing, and everyone in the organization has that value to add. And, you know, the leaders sometimes don't know. They're trying to find out. So I think, yes, just recognizing that everyone has that value.
And to close us out, and this is one sentence, so another difficult one, but Carmen, what gives you the most optimism about the future of work?
I think there's a lot of conversations and bodies of research happening on our importance in the workplace. So I'm optimistic that that will only increase, hopefully. And I think so many of the conversations at the conference were around that as well. So I'm excited to see where the next wave of workers take us.
And Marco, what gives you the most optimism?
I think ultimately, it doesn't matter how many tools and technology we have, people will do business with people. And as long as we remember that, doesn't matter what the workplace will look like, I think we will be able to continue to create value and connect with one another and never forget that, you know, it's always about relationships, whether they happen virtually, whether they happen in person. I'm all for in-person conversation and coffee, but if they have to happen virtually, then accommodate for that need as well.
Well, thank you so much, Marco, for joining Talking Property. It was great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Catherine. Loved being here.
And Carmen, thank you so much for joining. Both of your talks were probably the highlight of my Cornet experience.
Thanks, Catherine. It was great to be involved.
Marco and Carmen, your presentations reminded us that while technology will continue to reshape how work gets done, the future may be less about replacing human potential and more about understanding how to unlock it. I'd also like to acknowledge the incredible work that went into the conference. CBRE was proud to support the event as a sponsor, and our own Kaylee Higgins played a significant role in helping bring the conference together. It's also fantastic to see young leaders from across the industry, including CBRE's Maddie Grisdale in her role with the Cornet Australia Young Leaders Committee, helping create opportunities for the next generation of talent. To our listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'd love it if you could rate or review Talking Property to help other people find us. Until next time.